if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
That was not enough for many Afghans. It's Friday, the 20th of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, U.S. foreign policy might change after Afghanistan. Fewer students in many Indian universities. Sewage into drinking water in Singapore. Controversy against the third COVID vaccine plan. Fewer passengers on U.S. flights to China. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The race to evacuate tens of thousands of Americans and Afghans from Afghanistan is intensifying as prospects are uncertain for removing any Afghan allies after August 31st. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
Hundreds more U.S. troops arrived at Kabul's international airport to help evacuate American and Afghan citizens.
This is personal, and we're going to get them out. We've already evacuated approximately 5,000 people, and we intend to increase it.
But outside the airport, evidence the evacuation now hinges on Taliban cooperation, with reports of militants blocking the passage of the Americans and Afghans the U.S. has vowed to save. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin told reporters U.S. troops would stay focused on protecting the airfield. Chaos and panic on Monday halted air traffic there for hours and led to multiple deaths.
I don't have the capability to go out and extend operations currently into Kabul.
Kabul fell quickly Sunday as ousted Afghan President Ashraf Ghani fled the country. He spoke to the Afghan people via Facebook Wednesday.
I was forced to leave Kabul to prevent bloodshed and destruction of Kabul.
The U.S. vowed to complete its troop withdrawal by August 31st, but that may not be enough time to evacuate everyone at risk.
The fact of the matter is we are going to do as much as we can for as long as we can. If the window is 2 weeks, we will make the most of that window. If the window is slightly longer, we will make the most of that window.
And in a candid interview with ABC News' George Stephanopoulos Wednesday, President Joe Biden gave little hope for rescuing Afghans beyond the end of the month.
No, Americans don't understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will stay.
If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
And
if there are American forces, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
A message certain to disturb the thousands of at-risk Afghans yet to be evacuated and their American allies desperate to get them out. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
The Pentagon says it is ramping up evacuations from Afghanistan. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Military says it has taken 7,000 civilians out the past 5 days and now has enough aircraft in Kabul to move up to 9,000 every day.
We're ready to increase throughput.
But Major General Hank Taylor says it'll depend on several things, including the weather, how many people have actually been processed for departure, and the Taliban. There are reports militants have been trying to keep Afghan civilians from reaching the airport. The Pentagon says they have not impeded Americans. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Up next on VOA Asia, an overall look at what has happened in Afghanistan and what it might mean for the rest of the world. This is VOA Asia. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Malaysia's longest governing political party appeared set to reclaim the premiership it lost in a shock 2018 election result. North Korea issues navigational warning amid fears of weapons tests. Cambodia's government forms a new journalism ethics committee to monitor the media, a move local journalists and rights analysts don't like. Singapore to start gradual easing of COVID-19 border restrictions. China marks the 70th anniversary of the founding of the Tibet Autonomous Region with a call to accept the rule of the Communist Party. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Ira Melman. The U.S.-led war in Afghanistan began after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks on the United States, with U.S. forces helping Afghan allies to drive out the Taliban, who gave al-Qaeda safe harbor. 20 years later, the war has ended with the Taliban back in power in Kabul. BOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at the legacy of America's longest war.
On September 11, 2001, al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked four American jetliners, crashing two into the World Trade Center in New York City, one into the Pentagon, and one into a Pennsylvania field. A total of 2,997 people were killed. Then U.S. President George W. Bush was quick to respond.
I can hear you! The rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Bush ordered the bombing of al-Qaeda training facilities in Afghanistan, and a combination of U.S. air power and Afghan tribal alliances ousted the Taliban regime within weeks. Kabul residents danced in the streets, and men shaved off their beards, which were then required by the Taliban. Bush decided to invade Iraq and to widen the mission in Afghanistan, seeking to rebuild the country in the model of an American-style democracy. U.S. troops and aid workers helped rebuild Afghanistan, focusing on empowering girls and women who were not allowed to attend school or work outside the home under Taliban rule. But the Taliban quickly regrouped and began their years of armed resistance, including suicide attacks on Afghan civilians. Some experts say the unclear U.S. goals from the start in Afghanistan may have been the original sin in America's 20-year involvement. Jonathan Schroden is with the CNA Research Organization.
President Bush at the time felt compelled to leave Afghanistan better than he found it. And while he certainly wouldn't call it nation building, was willing to engage in some degree of that in order to try and, again, make Afghanistan a better place than it was before. But his Secretary of Defense, Don Rumsfeld, absolutely wanted to just get the U.S. military out of Afghanistan as quickly as he possibly could. And that tension really had a lot of deleterious effects early on in the U.S. presence in Afghanistan that arguably the U.S. Mission there never recovered from.
In 2009, then-President Barack Obama surged troops and contractors into the country in his first term, pushing the U.S. presence to more than 100,000 before announcing a drawdown years later that left a force of about one-tenth of that size. Former President Barack Obama.
For many of you, this will be your last tour in Afghanistan.
Obama's successor, former President Donald Trump, vowed to bring U.S. troops home from forever wars and had his top officials sign a peace deal with the Taliban in February 2020 to withdraw U.S. troops in 14 months. But after Bush, Obama, and Trump presided over the war, it is current U.S. President Joe Biden who is ending U.S. involvement. Defending the chaotic U.S. departure this week, Biden said the U.S. accomplished its goals in Afghanistan many years ago when it pushed the Taliban from power and killed al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden in Pakistan.
It was never supposed to be creating a unified, centralized democracy. Our only vital national interest in Afghanistan remains today what it has always been: preventing a terrorist attack on American homeland.
But for Afghans, both at home and abroad, emotions are raw after the rapid Taliban takeover of the country and amid images of Americans and other foreigners fleeing Kabul. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Thursday in Afghanistan, the Taliban placed security for the Afghan capital Kabul in the hands of senior members of the Haqqani Network, which has close ties with foreign jihadist groups, including the long-standing association with Al-Qaeda. Western intelligence officials say the assignment is alarming and undercuts Taliban promises to tread a more moderate path than the movement did when it ruled the country from 1996 to 2001. It also raises the prospect of Al-Qaeda being welcomed back to Afghanistan, they fear, which would break promises made by Taliban leaders during diplomatic talks in Qatar with U.S. officials last year, not to allow the country to again become a safe haven for foreign jihadists. Happening now in Asia, a powerful roadside bomb exploded among a procession of Shiite Muslims in central Pakistan Thursday, killing at least three and wounding over 50 people. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. We continue our coverage of the crisis in Afghanistan. Afghan students enrolled in Indian colleges and universities worry about the future that their country holds for them following the Taliban takeover there. India has a large Afghan student community, with most having come on scholarships offered by the Indian government, a goodwill gesture to promote education in the country. Anjana Pasricha spoke to a group of students enrolled in colleges in Chandigarh city in North India.
This is the refrain among several Afghan students in Indian colleges after the Taliban retook power in Afghanistan.
Our life will be in danger. Our family's life will be in danger. So I don't think so we can go back.
Not back to Afghanistan, never.
These students grew up hearing of the repression that defined the Taliban's five-year rule. They dismissed the group's assertion that it will respect women's rights and allow them to study and work.
Exactly what they do, it's not same with what they say.
Just it's starting, so they want a good image of them. But after one month, I'm sure, like everyone is sure, that after 1 month, they will apply their disgusting rules over people. And that rule will be like incredible dangerous especially for females.
Hundreds of Afghans study in Indian colleges and scholarships given by the Indian government to promote education in Afghanistan. The dread among students such as Diliabi is deepened by images of Afghans trying to flee. She too worries that her family's military background will make her a target and is unconvinced by the Taliban's assertion that there will be no reprisals.
One of my brother killed by Taliban in 2016 on the bomb blocks on his duty. And one of my younger brother, who was also in military, he ran away because of these treatments that we were getting from Taliban. So it's very risky.
Some students feel their future has been taken away. Ali Nazar Nabizada aspired to joining the government in Kabul. Now he wants to stay on in India.
I don't want to go back there because you know that the Taliban they don't see my knowledge.
He says it is heartbreaking.
I have lost everything. I had a country, a beautiful country, that right now it's captured by a group of terrorists, that it's known by all over the world. That I'm totally from art. I'm broken right now. I'm really broken.
Some have options. Azimi has made plans to migrate to Canada and does not know if she will ever return to her homeland.
I will definitely want to see my country, that in what position or in what condition is my country. So I will love to, but in Taliban situation, if after 20 years also the government are in the hands of Taliban, then I will not to see even Afghanistan.
Others may have to return. Although skeptical, they desperately want the Taliban to deliver on its promise of a more moderate stance.
We hope that they actually changed their minds, their behavior against of women.
We also hope that they should stand with their words now.
It remains to be seen if the progressive phase of Afghanistan these students symbolize will find a place under Taliban rule. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
You can get the latest information on the situation in Afghanistan 24 hours a day at voanews.com and all of our social media platforms.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, the United Kingdom calls for an immediate and sustained pause in clashes and unrest in Myanmar to allow vaccinations as an intense COVID-19 surge is ravaging that country. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. Giant pumps were deep underground at a plant in Singapore that helps transform sewage into water, so clean it's fit for human consumption while reducing ocean pollution. The tiny island nation has little in the way of natural water sources and has long had to rely principally on supplies from neighboring Malaysia. To boost self-sufficiency, the government has developed an advanced system for treating sewage involving a network of tunnels and high-tech plants. Recycled wastewater can now meet 40% of Singapore's water demand, a figure that's expected to rise to 55% by 2060, according to the country's water agency. While most is used for industrial purposes, some of it is added to drinking water supplies and reservoirs in the city-state of 5.7 million people. Lo Pi Chin, chief engineer of the Public Utility Board's Water Reclamation Department.
So our new water has passed more than 150,000 scientific tests, and it's well within the World Health Organization's guidelines for drinking water quality, as well as US EPA drinking water standards.
Singapore will have spent $7.4 billion US dollars on upgrading its water treatment infrastructure by the time the expansion is finished. One impetus to see greater self-sufficiency are the city-state's historically fractious relations with key water source Malaysia. The United States is set to wrap up its military presence in Afghanistan by the end of this month, the end of a campaign that saw hundreds of billions spent, often with little accounting. Along the Afghan border after 2001, smugglers' markets mushroomed in Pakistan, offering military gadgets, clothing, and luxury goods meant for American bases and compounds. For centuries, the mountain passes along the present-day Pakistan-Afghanistan border were a lifeline for armies, traders, and smugglers moving between Central Asia and the Indian subcontinent. However, in recent years, vendors at the bazaars say they have suffered successive blows that have severed the pipeline of smuggled goods that flowed freely into Pakistan for years. Pakistani store owner Mahbub Khan.
U.S. Bagram Air Base is empty now. We demand that the border should be opened and those goods come to us. Then our province will be much better off with this wealth.
Pakistan's fencing and sealing of hundreds of kilometers of the border in recent years and the rapid departure of foreign troops have led to dwindling supplies. The Taliban's sweeping offenses across Afghanistan in recent months have also not helped, leading to frequent border closures that choked off what little products were still able to make it to Pakistan. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. Making headlines in Asia, India's trade with Afghanistan has dried up as borders and banks have closed since the Taliban took over the country. But industry officials said that the disruption was temporary and that it would be business as usual soon. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Biden administration announced booster shots for Americans who have already been fully vaccinated. Aisha Sarai has more on that.
As just over half the American population has been vaccinated, the Biden administration announced Wednesday that it would provide booster shots for Americans 8 months after their second vaccine. But the decision to offer booster shots in the U.S. has drawn criticism from public health organizations, which note that much of the world is still struggling to get a first dose of the vaccine.
The decision to push booster shots in the United States is just one more step that our government is taking that's going to widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And this isn't just a moral stain on wealthy nations. It's really going to prolong the pandemic for everyone.
Biden responded to this criticism by noting the number of vaccines the U.S. has donated to other countries.
Now, there are some world leaders who say America shouldn't get a third shot until other countries got their first shot. I disagree. We can take care of America and help the world at the same time. In June and July, America administered 50 million shots here in the United States, and we donated 100 million shots to other countries.
Washington's decision comes in defiance of the World Health Organization's call for a moratorium on booster shot discussion until more of the global population is vaccinated. Isha Sarai, VOA News.
VOA Asia continues. The U.S. Transportation Department on Wednesday said it will limit some flights from Chinese carriers to 40% passenger capacity for 4 weeks after the Chinese government imposed similar limits on four United Airlines flights. Reuters' Gloria Tso reports.
The U.S. Transportation Department slapped limits on Chinese airlines on Wednesday, following a similar move by Beijing. The order will limit U.S.-China flights on four different Chinese airlines to 40% capacity for at least a month. China told United Airlines earlier this month it would be imposing sanctions after five passengers who traveled from San Francisco to Shanghai allegedly tested positive for COVID-19. The U.S. government says China's circuit breaker policy violates the nation's air services agreement, placing, quote, undue culpability on carriers for travelers testing positive for COVID-19. United said it was pleased to see the U.S. taking action, quote, in pursuit of fairness in this important market. The Chinese embassy in Washington did not immediately comment. The U.S. and China have sparred over flight services since the beginning of the pandemic. The latest limits come as many Chinese students head to the U.S. for the start of fall classes.
Gloria Tso reporting. A Pomeranian dog named Jinwei was buried alive and left for dead in 2018 in the South Korean city of Busan. No charges were filed against his owner at the time, but animal abusers will soon face harsher punishment. Jason Albano has an explanation.
3 years ago, little Jinhui the Pomeranian was buried alive and left for dead. His owners weren't charged. That's because in South Korea, animals have no legal status. That makes it difficult to bring potential abusers to heel. Jinhui, which means true light in Korean, now lives in a shelter run by Kim Ye-young.
His owner lost his temper and told his kids to bury him alive. He was barely alive when we rescued him after it was reported. But the man wasn't punished, as the dog was recognized as an object owned by him.
Cases like Jinhui may soon change, according to Chung Jae-min, the Justice Ministry's Director General of Legal Counsel. In an interview with Reuters, he said the country is planning to amend its civil code, giving animals a legal upgrade.
Once the civil act declares that animals that used to be defined as property are not objects, the fundamental evaluation and perception will change in the legal world. When attempts are made to injure or kill an animal, the declaration will be reflected when judges determine punishment.
If Parliament passes the amendment next month, it would make South Korea one of only a handful of countries to recognize animals as beings with a right to protection, enhanced welfare, and respect for life. It could also pave the way towards life insurance packages for animals, or even a ban there on the consumption of dog meat.
Reuters' Jason Albano reporting. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our BO Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Emmy Heibels, Chris Castillo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.